The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, Serie A, Roma start with three Brits and end up in bits. In Stadio Olimpico stunner with Juventus. Spain, the Super Cup in Saudi and shopaholic Barcelona. Why Bayern Munich will be glad to see the back of Gladbach. And PSG Lyon and Marseille's first win at Bordeaux in an eon. Plus more top content from the continent in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Okay then, listener. Tuesday, January the 11th. Kind of, but actually Monday, January the 10th. You know how that works. Monday afternoon, I'm sat here with Alvaro Romeo. Happy New Hello. Year, Alvaro.
Feliz Año Nuevo.
There you go. James Horncastle's also with us, James.
Hello. I was wondering, is there a song like Feliz Navidad for the New Year? Did they do like a follow-up with Feliz Buen Año? Whatever.
You should know, guys, that song is English, right? Or American?
I think it might be American. It's nothing nothing produced on these shows. But, so no, I'm guessing. Julien Laurence.
Bonjour.
Bonne année.
Bonne année. Bonne santé.
Oui, merci. And not with us today, Raphael Honigstein. He's away on important business.
Business.
Still, plenty for us to discuss. We've had two whole rounds in Italy, two in Spain as well, and France are back up. And we'll chat about the Bundesliga too. Of course we will. Jules, were you across the Bundesliga this weekend?
Of course I was, yeah. ¿Qué pasa, hermano? ¿Qué pasa, hermano?
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing what that's all about. But first, let's get some moments of the weekend with Paddy Power. All right, Alvaro, you're up first. What's your moment of the weekend?
Well, more than the moment of the weekend is the moaning of the weekend, if I may. Yes, because this weekend a couple of football clubs have used their social media in Spain, to social media accounts, to criticize the refereeing they have been a victim of, as they are saying. On Saturday, during the halftime of Real Madrid-Valencia, Valencia publishes the following on social media: Real Madrid robberies are becoming quite repetitive. And in the same tweet, they mention as well the Money Heist, which is a Spanish series, fictional series about the robbery, you know that one? Mm-hmm. And they were referring to the penalty on Casemiro, called minutes before. And it looked like that one was going to be the only one in the weekend, but a day later, there was another institutional absurdity because Betis did a very similar one, calling the sending off of Alex Moreno an ignominy, an assault on the rulebook, and something that can't be understood. So, you know, as you can see, there was a little bit of self-pity by Betis and Valencia, and maybe something more from two big football clubs, actually. Two of the most important clubs in the Spanish pyramid.
I'm no lawyer, but suggesting that Real Madrid are stealing results on social media sounds actionable to me. What's been the reaction in Madrid?
I think that there hasn't been a very big one yet. Whatever Real Madrid
says... What has Chiringuito said about it?
I tell you what, we will know on Monday evening.
Right, okay.
We will have the chiringuito Monday evening, but the truth is that in the past there was a lot of this, James, I have to say. Spanish presidents were very vocal, even at halftime they were talking to journalists and reporters, but right now this is not happening. So if they come in their Twitter account, it's not only the rant of a president, it's like a big institutional message, and it was a little bit weird to see.
The last chiringuito I saw was of one of the reporters, I think the guy who's friends with Cristiano,
Edu Aguirre.
He found a piece of Carlo Ancelotti's chewing gum.
Yeah, the packet. Yeah, exciting.
A Pulitzer.
All right, James, let's hear your moment of the weekend.
Well, I'm just looking at
every week. Every week he goes, I don't know. There's so many, James. There's so many. Every week, James, I don't know. There's so many, I don't know where to start. We all have one, and he every week goes, I don't know, James.
My moment of the week has been influenced by just seeing what Arturo Vidal has put out on Twitter, which is a photo of him and his girlfriend, Sonia, leaning and kissing each other on the bonnet of his pandita, as he says, his little Fiat Panda.
Nice.
Which his, you may recall, his house was burgled recently, and they didn't take his Fiat Panda, which was quite surprising. Arturo Vidal, the most famous driver of the Fiat Panda, after Roberto Baggio, of course. Baggio has his camouflage Panda.
Nice. Does it look like the Gerard Piquet leaning on a car kissing photo?
Zlatan. No, it doesn't look like that. Sonia's in a nice fur coat. Okay. I'm not going to describe anything else because this is his
moment of the weekend, Jules. How
I
do you feel?
Believe that. I mean, from everything that happened in Serie A this weekend.
Right. Now we'll get to that, Jules.
Yeah, we'll get to that. All right. Well, Jules, follow that if you can.
Well, mine is obviously that video that we saw from Mauro Icardi and Wanda on Twitter. No, I'm kidding. My moment of the weekend is the first win for Marseille against Bordeaux since October the 1st, 1977.
Attention, le bon ballon pour Cengiz Under qui rentre dans la surface de réparation et qui peut se jouer de tout le monde, à la fois de la défense girondine, puis de Benoît Costil pour ouvrir le score. L'Olympique de Marseille qui mène 1-0.
In all my lifetime, I've never seen Marseille beating Bordeaux. It happened on Friday night, eventually, you know, the end of the curse, the longest curse and the longest winless run in French football history, 44 years, as we said, and they won against a depleted Bordeaux, rubbish Bordeaux team, but it was very good for Marseille to finally break the spell.
Right, but go back to that Wander and Icardi video. What was in that then?
Which video?
Which one, yeah.
Anyway, all right, excellent. Well, just to finish off moments of the weekend, here's one of my own. 86th minute of the Liga NOS game between Estoril and Porto this weekend.
Yes.
Porto are drawing 2-2 with Estoril. Sergio Conceição, Porto manager, throws on a young player by the name of Francisco Conceição, his son. 2 minutes later, he grabs the winner. My word, the scenes afterwards. Everyone's piling on Francisco, but he's breaking clear of them all because he just wants to get to one man, his dad, his papa there on the sideline. Really emotional when the two of them get together and Sergio's basically hitting him on the back of the head, but in a fatherly fashion. Lovely scenes, lovely scenes.
Did VAR not rule this one out cruelly?
I don't know. Had it done that before?
Yeah, it had. They had this moment where they were celebrating, you know, in all the emotion you'd expect, father seeing his son follow in his footsteps and score for Porto, and VAR cruelly denied it. I think that's the biggest case for eradicating VAR that there has ever been. That would be exhibit one for
exhibit
me.
Exhibit one. All right. This was a particularly crucial goal though, wasn't it, Jules?
Yeah, it was, James, because Sporting had lost the night before on Friday, which meant that Porto, with a win, could go 3 points clear at the top of the table, and they were 2-0 down at halftime against Estoril. And of the five sons that Sergio Conceição has with Mrs. Conceição, there's the little one who's 6 years old, who is at the academy, who might be very good, but I think Francisco is by far the best of the other four.
Excellent. All right, well, let's get into our weekly roundup in detail. We're going to start with Serie A and what was on Sunday a game of the season.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. If one leg of your 4+-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1-5 per leg, online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply, 18+, begambleaware.org.
Deciglio con l'esterno, per Morata, dentro il pallone, attenzione di McKennie verso Deciglio, Deciglio può calciare, Deciglio, 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 siamo avanti noi, 4-3, ha segnato Mattia Deciglio.
Extraordinary match, Sunday tea time at the Stadio Olimpico. Roma with 3-1 up with about 20 minutes to go. Then Juventus scored 3 goals in 7 minutes and Mattia Deciglio there with the winner. Over 1,500 days after he got his first ever Serie A goal, that was his second. Quite remarkable. James, you were witness to all of this.
Yeah, it was remarkable because Juventus don't score goals. So when they were 3-1 down and they'd lost Federico Chiesa to injury, Chiesa, who has since had a scan, it's been revealed that he's torn his ACL and will miss the rest of the season, which also means he will miss the World Cup playoff for Italy in March. He thought, wow, there's no way back for Juventus now. Absolutely not. And yet, that Manuel Locatelli goal, not a rare goal for him, but a rare goal from midfield for Juventus, got them back into it at 3-2. And then just seemed that all hell broke loose after that. And for Decilio to pop up, as you mentioned, someone who'd only ever scored one top flight goal before in quite a long and his critics would say underwhelming career, was just incredible. I think Landucci, the former goalkeeper, who's Massimiliano Allegri's assistant, deserves some credit if it was him making the substitutions rather than Allegri, who was suspended for basically getting into the referee's ear after the draw against Napoli on Thursday night, because the substitutions changed the game. I thought Morata came on, you know, Morata, who, you know, often criticised by myself for, yes, scoring goals, but often being remembered for the ones that he misses. He was involved in the second and the third for Juventus. And also Artur, who came on. I think Juventus fans now expect Allegri going forward to play Artur and Locatelli in midfield. The problem has been that Artur, I think, wants to move because he hasn't been playing up until now. But one of the reasons why he hasn't been playing up until now is he's always injured. But from a Roma perspective, oh, my word. I mean, to take the lead, to perhaps have been even further in front, yeah, to concede that great Dybala goal, which came out of nothing. And then to get yourself 3-1 up, deservedly so, and collapse in the way that they did, felt quintessentially Roma in some respects. But yeah, I mean, the drama of Pellegrini, who managed to score a worldy free kick but was unable to put the penalty away, and Szczesny, who is the hero in both of the games against Roma this season, his former club, saved a penalty to ensure that his side won at the Allianz Stadium, saved another penalty here to ensure that they won again, was there was so much going on in that game. It's hard to kind of do it justice, really. And I would find it actually hard to rewatch because the actual experience of watching it live was just something incredible, really.
Mm. Remarkable goals, a remarkable outcome. Terrible news about Federico Chiesa, who, as you say, out for the season. Juventus 3 points off the top four now, 6 points off a collection of teams who are trailing behind them in the race for top four finishes. From Roma's point of view, one of the things before the game, and it was an absolutely extraordinary game to watch, but one of the talking points prior to kickoff was the fact that for the first time in a very long time, there were three Englishmen in a Serie A team's starting lineup: Tammy Abraham, Ainsley Maitland-Niles and Chris Smalling for Roma.
Yeah, for the first time ever in Serie A. Remember, Serie A has been around since 1927. So I'm pretty sure when, you know, Herbert Kilpin was setting up AC Milan and James Richardson Spensley was setting up Genoa,
yeah,
we would have had three English players.
Yeah, so Gab Marcotti reckons 1901 when Hood, right, Kilpin, Davis and Allison all lined up for Milan.
Not the English Allison. And I thought Tammy Abraham played really well in this game and could have had a hat-trick if he'd got a little bit lucky, because that chance before his goal, which Smalling header from a corner flicked on by Tammy, Szczesny saves it. And then right at the end of the first half, again, Smalling header. And Tammy from point-blank range doesn't really know a lot about it, so it's not like he can really direct it on goal and knees it over.
I think his knee got in the way. I think he was expecting it to hit his foot and the knee just somehow. But anyway, as you say.
And then even that Szczesny risky, I'm going to run out and dive to his feet and manage to push the ball away, you know, that was, again, Tammy threw on goal. So as much as Mourinho said there was a psychological collapse, I thought actually, okay, you can criticise Roma from throwing their lead away from 3-1 to 4-3. But even at 4-3, you know, they obviously had the penalty and they kept creating. You know, I mean, I think one of the things that made this game so epic was the fact that Giorgio Chiellini comes on. They go three at the back and within 2 minutes, Chiellini's head is bandaged. It's just brilliant. And at that point, I thought, right, okay, Chiellini's there. There's no way they let this slip now. And they didn't.
Were you boys able to follow the extraordinary events at the Olympico?
I was able to, and I thought at some point that with the 3-1 it was going to be pretty much impossible for Juventus to come back. But I was very, very happy to see that Dybala, I want to single out Paulo Dybala, finish off that one with such a confidence, because we have seen Dybala sometimes being a little bit more not so accurate, or maybe just not so confident to do a finish like this. But that reminded me of the best Paulo Dybala, so it's very good to have him back. And of course, as James said, now that Chiesa is not going to be around, I know that they don't play in the same position, but probably Paulo Dybala is going to have more creative responsibilities, even more now. So it's very important to have him fresh, fit, and especially confident.
Yeah, the ball flashed in by Chiesa from the wing, and then Dybala just meeting it and, well, bringing it in under control pretty deftly, and then curling it past the defender into the just inside the post. Lovely stuff. Was that the best goal of the game, Jules, or did you go for Lorenzo Pellegrini's wonderful free kick?
Yeah, the free kick from Pellegrini is great, and he could have been a hero. And instead, the penalty miss is what we will mostly remember as well from the game. I have to say, as good as Landucci's coaching was, him or Allegri, whatever, I was very disappointed by Mourinho, almost as disappointing as his comments post-game, because once again, it was not his fault if they lost. It's because the players were weak and because they lack character, and it's not him that needs to adapt to the players. It's the players that have to sort of copy him or whatever way he put it. I think at 3-2 after the Locatelli goal, you sense, or I mean, just me watching on television, you sense that the game is turning. And yet, instead of bringing him on, I don't know, Kumbula or Villar or someone like that, or changing something, you know, I don't know if Maitland-Niles really, after arriving 5 minutes before kickoff, could have played the whole 90 minutes. He did well, to be fair to him, in the context. But I was very surprised by coaching or lack of coaching from Mourinho. And I think he's partly to blame for the defeat too.
Roman has conceded, I was checking that, 28 goals, and from the top 7 in Italy, they are the club that has conceded more goals. And we all take as Mourinho, or maybe not anymore, but he was regarded as the defensive mastermind. And the truth is that his teams lately, Tottenham as well, they haven't been particularly great defensively.
No, indeed not. Their dreadful run of results against the big clubs continues. They've now lost this week to Milan on Thursday, and Juve here, and they've lost at home to Inter Milan and Juve, all in the space of the same season. Desperate news. Juve, meanwhile, have a date with Inter, the Serie A leaders, in the Super Cup on Wednesday. Inter, who are fresh from a 2-1 victory over Lazio. You had this as the kind of second half of your Serie A doubleheader on Sunday, James.
Yeah, it was really hard to focus on this game. I really needed to cool down after the Roma-Juventus one. It was a good game by any other standard. I think in some respects the quality was higher. Maybe didn't have as much entertainment value. But Inter keep on keeping on. I think they were unlucky not to go in front earlier. Nice pass from Alexis Sanchez for Lautaro. Goal ruled out for a marginal offside. Immobile had a couple of chances himself as well. But Inter came through that pretty clean. Yeah, I don't think they lost anyone to suspension, which is key because those suspensions carry into the Super Cup rather than into the next league game. So not only have Juventus lost Chiesa to injury, but they will be out De Ligt at San Siro against Inter, and they'll be without Cuadrado as well. So that's a very depleted Juventus team going in for the first piece of silverware, which, you know, as much as people will say, it's the Super Cup, who cares? Yeah, it's a chance for Simone Inzaghi to win his first piece of silver as an Inter coach. And these things tend to matter when a new coach comes in and takes over from someone as big as Conte. So I think that's definitely going to be a game worth watching rather than just thinking of it as an exhibition piece. So tune in.
One of the reasons, of course, that James was struggling to keep his eyes on Inter Lazio was because Leon PSG was taking place at the same time. What again?
He was texting me. How come? You know, right? He was watching that more than anything else. Really.
Exactly. We'll come on to that a little bit later on. And next up, let's get our Rückrunde underway with the Bundesliga.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Hier jetzt natürlich fast alles nach vorne werfen, mit links reingegeben, Kopfballmöglichkeit 2-1, das gibt's doch gar nicht. Stefan Leiner.
Yep, it's the Bundesliga with no one here to correct our pronunciation, excitingly. The Rückrunde, the second half of the season, got underway on Friday. Bayern Munich, with a losing start, defeated 2-1 by Borussia Mönchengladbach at the Allianz Arena. Again, you recall that Gladbach had beaten Bayern 5-0 earlier this season in the German Cup. This time, Bayern were without 13 first-teamers, most of whom were out with COVID, although there were one or two other circumstances as well. They had applied to get the game postponed. Bundesliga's not into that, thank you. Bayern were forced to bring on a 16-year-old at one point. Crikey. Did you watch this game as well, football addicts that you are?
Yeah, Friday night.
Yes.
All right. What was your take?
I think they can play another 99 times. They will win. They created enough. I think they switched off for 5 minutes in that first half when they conceded the two goals. I mean, you mentioned the players that they, well, that Nagelsmann had to bring on or brought on, and that Paul Reiner became the youngest ever Bayern Munich player to come on, even younger than Musiala. It's funny because before the game, Nagelsmann was all like, "We want the revenge from the cup defeat." You know, I think he even used some rude words. And in the end, it was just not there. I don't think it was the evening. Obviously, all the players missing was a big blow, and in the bigger picture, I don't think it's a disaster for them to win. They're 6 points clear of Dortmund still.
Right.
But yeah, it's still unusual to see them losing. That's their third defeat already this season.
Although not unusual to see them losing to Borussia Mönchengladbach, yeah, who I think have beaten them 6 times out of the last 11. Dortmund closing the gap on Saturday to 6 points at the top. Dortmund with a quite uncharacteristic performance. They were 2-0 down away to Eintracht Frankfurt, but then came back to score 3 goals in the last 20 minutes. All three of them set up by Erling Haaland, Torgan Hazard, Jude Bellingham and Mahmoud Dahoud with the winner.
And if you wondered how good Erling Haaland's Spanish is, well, yes, you might have heard that he had a very strong argument with the Eintracht Frankfurt striker and scorer of a brace in that game, Rafael Santos Borre, the Colombian. And Haaland was all like, "Hey, qué pasa, hermano?" Blah 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 blah. So yeah, he's ready for a move to Spain. That's for sure.
Feliz Navidad. Did he do that as well?
It was. I think it was the next line, but the referee intervened and all of that. So
right. Right.
He's ready for a move to Spain. He's clearly been studying. So Barcelona, Real Madrid. I mean, Barcelona are back. They can't register anyone, but they will be able to sign Erling Haaland. Anyone, you know, it's coming.
Yeah, we'll touch on that in a second. But I was looking at the Bundesliga today, and I noticed a remarkable thing. Everyone's played the same number of games. They literally have not postponed a single fixture yet because they just don't. They tell people if you've got 11 players, 11 of your senior squad available, and it has to be for COVID, you can't throw in injuries the way that, say, the Premier League does, then you have to go ahead and play the fixture. And so far, they've managed to proceed with the schedule untouched. Compare and contrast that with your leagues. I mean, James City has a total mess at this point. We'll maybe touch on that in a second. Alvaro, how's it in Spain?
It's not a massive mess. It could be worse. But I think that what's happening on Premier League, it doesn't have any parallel in the rest of the European leagues, as far as I am aware. What happens to Burnley, for example, who has 4 games less played than the leader table, Manchester City. In Spain is all right. I think the biggest paradox is that probably Spain started the league from the organizational point of view worse than the rest of the leagues. Because do you remember that when the South American qualifiers in September and in October were played, that Atletico, Barcelona, and then Real Madrid, and I believe Sevilla or Villarreal, I'm not too sure, were exempt from playing that weekend because the South American players were going to arrive late. Well, that looked like it was going to distort the calendar a lot, plus the COVID. But the COVID hasn't hit Spain that much, or at least Spanish clubs as much. Then the rules are a little bit more flexible. You can play with many players from your B team. And at the same time, in Christmas, Spain has stopped playing football for about 8 to 10 days, which has helped a lot of clubs to, you know, get their act together, to enforce the protocols, and more or less everything is okay now.
Mm, all right. In Italy, meanwhile, I don't think we got anyone with four games in hand a la Burnley. But the curious situation there is that a lot of these games are currently scheduled to be forfeited as 3-0 victories to the team that did turn up. Teams have been turning up to fixtures, James. You can explain this better. Because the league won't officially admit that they're going to postpone the game. So the side that does have the players has to turn up as if they were going to play a game. And that way they can have it recorded as a 3-0 win for them. But in the knowledge that down the line, the other side is going to appeal and they'll just have to replay the fixture anyway.
Yeah, it's complicated. I mean, it was a very fast-moving situation on Thursday when, yeah, I mean, over the course of the last week, 10 days preceding it, there had been more than 100 cases of COVID in Serie A. And the protocol, or lack of a protocol, which is quite astonishing, really, given we've been in this situation for 2 years, all of a sudden became a problem. And now they've kind of fallen into line with the Bundesliga, whereby, you know, if you've got 12 outfield players and a goalkeeper, you absolutely must play. And it doesn't matter if you have to draw upon kids from your Primavera in order to fulfill a fixture. It has to go ahead. So you had this situation yesterday where Udinese had, 12 positives, 8 players who'd had to train by themselves, so not as a team, playing against Atalanta and losing 6-2. And that infuriated the hierarchy at Udinese. They didn't think it represented fair play.
Not a match, but a martyrdom.
Pretty much. And then you had this situation on Monday where Bologna is saying, hang on a minute, we're in quarantine at the moment and we're not going to be allowed to train. And yet on Tuesday, when we come out of quarantine, we're supposed to be in Cagliari to play a game. This just doesn't make any sense. You know, we will be going into a game having not done any training whatsoever for it. How is this fair? And the league just doesn't seem to be sympathetic, partly because at the end of last week, the Italian Football Federation had a call from the Prime Minister of Italy saying, you know what, I think we might actually shut Serie A down for a fortnight. The Italian Football Federation said, okay, hang on, what can we do to stop this happening? Okay, we'll limit crowds even more, we'll make protocols even more rigid than they are. And so you have this, compromise, which is not really satisfying to anyone at the moment.
Right.
And it's also, this is key, James, one last point, it's impacting transfer strategy. Because a lot of clubs are now thinking, hang on, right, okay, so we're only allowed to play in front of 5,000 fans. That's not very good for big teams like Inter, Lazio, Roma, Juventus, and that sort of thing. And teams that were considering maybe dabbling in the transfer market, saying, okay, well, we're no longer guaranteed of getting these gate receipts, getting this kind of revenue, so actually maybe we'll stick rather than twist.
Yeah, it's a curious decision to reduce the attendances, because that's really not where the question is in terms of player positives. It's not as if the players have been picking up all these infections from the crowd, at least not the way I understand it.
No,
Jules?
It's to stop the spread of the virus within society, like in France and in Germany. It's only England, really, because even at the African Cup of Nations, they've reduced capacity of stadiums.
And in Spain as well.
Yeah, Spain as well.
75.
So, I mean, in France, it's a great idea because they don't do it depending on how big your stadium is. It's 5,000 fans for everyone, whether you've got a 5,000-seater stadium, so they would it'd be full, or 60,000, and they put them all in the same stand. So they can't, obviously, social distance. So now they've realized how stupid it was. So now they've spread them out. But we've had games where they were all together, all 5,000 of them, in the one same stand, which obviously defy all logic.
It does a bit, doesn't it? All right. Well, we'll talk about Liga very shortly. Next up, let's move on to La Liga.
It's the Paddy Power Football Supporters Support Line. We're talking to Joe in Newcastle and Greg in Norwich. How are you feeling, gents?
Good. Optimistic, Paddy.
But your team's at the bottom of the table. Why are you so happy?
Well, I think I speak for Norwich and Newcastle fans everywhere when I say we really fancy our chances of winning the championship next year.
Ah, silver linings, eh? Just like with Paddy Power's Bet Builder, where you get money back as a free bet if one leg lets you down. Paddy Power applies to pre-match online bet builder bets with minimum 4 legs of at least 1-5 odds each. Max free bet £10 per day. Excludes enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Spanish Super Cup played this week in its traditional home of Saudi Arabia, Alvaro. Barcelona facing Real Madrid on Wednesday. On Thursday, it's your Athletic Club de Bilbao taking on rubbishy old Atletico Madrid. You've got one foot in the final, I reckon.
We are the title holders.
Yes.
So I think we should be treated with a little bit of...
respect.
Respect to the world, yeah. A little bit of fear.
Tweet it. Tweet that out.
A little bit of fear. But you know, there is this this rumor that the Super Cup was kind of organized this way with four clubs as opposed to two, as it was originally, because the organizers wanted to have more clásicos.
Right.
And the hosting country as well, as many as possible. So here you are. You've got a clásico in the middle of January between Barcelona and Real Madrid, first semifinal. Second semifinal between Athletic Club Bilbao and Atlético de Madrid. I think that this one is going to be more contested than the other one.
Oh, yeah.
And then the final on Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Atletico Madrid, another disappointing result this weekend. Only a 2-2 draw away at Villarreal, although it did feature a magnificent goal from just past the halfway line from Angel Correa. How did Athletic get on this weekend?
Probably the worst decision I have made this weekend was watching Alaves Athletic Club.
Right.
It was always going to be that kind of game because it's tremendously rainy here in the Basque Country. It's cold, it's a derby, and none of the teams score many goals, so it was a proper 0-0.
A proper 0-0, excellent. Yeah. Okay, but they were saving themselves, no doubt, for... laying on, you know, the show in the sunny climes of Saudi Arabia. Excellent. Real Madrid going into their clash with Barcelona after bouncing back from their opening game of 2022, in which they'd been defeated at Getafe. This time around, they beat Valencia 4-1 amid controversy, as you were mentioning earlier on, Alvaro. But it did see both Benzema and Vinicius picking up a brace. Benzema reaching 300 goals for the club. Only three players have ever scored more for Real Madrid.
Karim the Dream!
Probably those are Cristiano, Alfredo Di Stefano and Raul, right?
Definitely.
Which is very impressive by Karim Benzema. He has scored every 97 minutes in the league and every 88 minutes in the Champions League. So, you know, he's having a really, really fine season. And altogether with Vinicius, they are doing a very good pair. They have scored 27 goals between them. And, you know, Valencia doesn't have a match-winning player. Maybe Carlos Soler can be that guy, but he was absent from this game. And Real Madrid has Karim Benzema. And Benzema scored the penalty, that penalty that Valencia complained about, on Casemiro. And then he scored another one for Real Madrid. Vinicius was also in the score sheet. And I think that Real Madrid won because they are simply better than Valencia. I think that Valencia did a very fine job. But as soon as they had a dip in their form during the game, Real Madrid capitalized. Valencia didn't just spread the red carpet, but Real Madrid just profited the second that Valencia just lost a little bit the focus and the concentration. And yeah, this is a Real Madrid team that is, they have recovered from the loss against Getafe, a loss that they could actually afford because they have a decent advantage at the top of the table. And the news is that Ancelotti is going to continue with that 10+1 lineup. I mean, we always know who is going to play for Real Madrid. And the only player that rotates is the right winger. One day can be Rodrigo, another day can be Asensio, and another day can be Eden Hazard. But generally speaking, Carlo Ancelotti knows or has detected this time as the right one to take us the biggest possible advantage over the rest of the clubs, and he's using his preferred players to the point that when one of them leaves the pitch, like for example Luka Modric against Valencia, who was phenomenal by the way, again, hyperactive and he was everywhere, ever present, ever green, the moment Luka Modric left the pitch, Real Madrid felt it. There are two steps in quality in Real Madrid right now, whoever is playing, whoever is in the bench, and Carlo Ancelotti knows that, and I think that he's using all that to his benefit.
Alvaro, as an impartial observer, how much of a case did Valencia and Betis have in their complaints about the refereeing?
I think that both actions are quite interpretative, really. I think that what happened to Casemiro, well, some may argue that that is not a penalty. In my opinion, it was, really, because if a person or if a player is running and suddenly he gets touched slightly, obviously he's going to lose the balance. I think that Casemiro didn't mind falling down in the box. That's another story. But I don't think that there is such a thing as a robbery. But we all know that Valencia and Real Madrid, they have had like a long row for many years. Well, it's been kind of underground for the last decade, let's put it that way. But in 2003, 2004, in the big days of Valencia, when Valencia was actually contender to win the league and they won many leagues, they had all this type of problems every now and then, Madrid and Valencia, to the point that once Jorge Valdano went to the dugout to talk to the referee in the halftime of one of the games between Madrid and Valencia. I believe that Betis obviously can complain as well about what happened to Alex Moreno, because the referee, as soon as Alex Moreno hit the Rayo Vallecano player, the referee went to let the action happen, and as soon as the ball went out, then he reviewed that action, not with VAR. He went to the players, and he had the yellow card in his hand, and he was going to show it to Alex Moreno, but as soon as he saw that Isi, Rayo Vallecano player, was bleeding, because Alex Moreno just lifted or raised his leg a little bit too much, he soaked in the red card. So I think that is not exactly blood what should determine whether it's a yellow or a red, right? But the impact, and the referee thought in the first place that that was only worth a yellow, but then he changed his mind, and that's why Betis got angry. But again, this is the kind of thing that doesn't look good, because it ultimately it's just hinting that there is like a conspiracy against these teams.
Puts a shadow over the league, and that doesn't benefit
anybody. It puts a
shadow
over the league, of course, and especially if you accuse Real Madrid, because we all know that they are normally winning many leagues. So I think that this is not nice. In the past, this was done by presidents in the halftime, talking to reporters, being overheated, and in the heat of the moment, they were saying things like this. But when you tweet this, you have had the time to think about it, and then yet you tweet it, you click onto it. So I think that this is something else. And it doesn't look nice in La Liga as well. And it's throwing a shadow in the league that I don't think that it benefits anyone.
Okay. Of course, we've seen this in other countries in the past. And in one, it did kind of turn out to be true, the winds of the north and all that. Anyway, Barcelona taking on Real Madrid then on Wednesday. A 1-1 draw for them this weekend against Granada. Is someone going to discreetly tap them on the arm and tell them they have no money, Alvaro?
I think that they are pretty aware of that.
Are they?
Yeah, they are aware, and somehow they are managing at least to register the players that they want to get in winter.
So Ferran Torres, who they announced with much fanfare, they can't register him yet?
No, but they have done it today.
They have done it today.
Okay, finally, right. Yes, because they found a way. Matteo Alemani, the sporting director, he... he extended the contract of Umtiti, as strange as it sounds, until 2026. Umtiti barely plays for Barcelona these days. Right. And that is the financial engineering needed.
So they reduced his wage, and that gave them enough of a margin.
Yeah, they reduce Umtiti's wages. You extend his contract for 4 years now.
But I mean, I read that they're still interested in players like Erling Haaland. That would require all Barcelona's players to pay them for pitching up at...
No, it will require a lot. It will require everyone. For example, Sergi Roberto lowering his salary, something that they have asked him for to do. It will require probably selling Philip Coutinho.
Yeah, so where do you think these stories come from? Is it Barcelona who are just kind of addicted to the thrill of kind of just window shopping and they just can't...
No, there are a few things. To start with, there are contradictory messages, because Joan Laporta has said a couple of times that this was possible, like bringing big stars. And then perhaps we have seen some other members of the directing board silencing Laporta in a very polite way, telling him, well, we'll have to work on what we have, number one, and make sure that we reduce our salary mass. Then next season, Barcelona is going to have a really low salary cap, even lower than now, because La Liga rules are quite strict. So it feels quite impossible that Barcelona can make a big move next summer unless they really offload many, many important players. And when I'm talking about important players, I'm talking about the likes of Frenkie de Jong, I'm talking about the likes of one of the promising youngsters. So this doesn't seem to be what's going to happen, of course. And at the mid, every talk that you can hear about signing Erling Haaland or whichever the player is a little bit of a smoke. I believe that the fact that Barcelona has two diaries fully devoted to report on sport only, like Sport and Mundo Deportivo, doesn't help either, because sometimes or many times they are just bringing stories or rumors, or they are talking to agents and all that. And yes, there are many pages to be filled day by day, and eventually you end up just writing about rumors like this. It's true that Mino Raiola is a very good contact of Joan Laporta, but as it stands, for Barcelona to sign Erling Haaland, they will have to do a tremendous work. It will be like shaking a cocktail maker and, you know, changing everything upside down to be able to sign a player of this caliber and to be able to pay a player of this caliber. Because if you sign Erling Haaland, you know that you are going to compete with the likes of Manchester City, Real Madrid, or whoever, to pay him the highest possible salary.
Right, okay. Not going to Barcelona then, by the sound of it. Brilliant stuff, Alvaro. Next up, let's check in on PSG Poch and the whole Ligue 1 gang.
We're all driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to the Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com. You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which will come in handy when Mikel Arteta finally bends the process altogether. Pre-match bet builders only get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4+ legs. Maximum free bet is £10. Other T's and C's apply, and please gamble responsibly.
All right, how's the new year going in the French capital, Jules? Not so good, huh?
That's the most Parisian reaction I've ever heard you give, I think.
Oh, Mbappé was brilliant, though. Mbappé was brilliant again.
Against Lyon.
He was unlucky not to score 2 or 3.
Yeah. He hit the outside of the post twice, but
free kick.
I thought they defended well on him. It's just, he's PSG. That's why he's right now when Messi is not there. Mm. And he was not really ready. He tested positive for COVID. During the winter break, Neymar is still injured. And this team has been saved so many times by Mbappé. Basically, the whole style of the team and everything is just over him, on him, around him, for him, whatever him you want. And if he doesn't do it for you, then you struggle. And in the end, which is great because it's the entrance of two of the youngsters, Edouard Michu and Xavi Simons. One, Michu is a Paris-born and bred kid through the academy, through and through. Simons is a young player, very talented, that they got from Barcelona a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, who have been crying for a chance for the first team in Ligue 1. They've played in the domestic cups, but in Ligue 1, really, that was the first time they had a proper chance in a big game as well. And they made a big difference for the last 25 minutes when they come on. And Michu gave the assist to Kerrer for the PSG goal to make it 1-1. So I really hope that now Pochettino gives them a proper chance, and they deserve to start ahead of players like Ander Herrera, who was shocking in that game. Wijnaldum, who in fairness to him, is moved around by Pochettino everywhere, but was shocking again on Sunday night. So I think they deserve the chance to start now.
Okay, just one win now in the last 5 Ligue 1 games for Paris Saint-Germain. Yeah. I did read about some controversy over Messi not bothering to tell Pochettino that he'd tested positive. Was that a real story, or was that people just causing muckraking?
I think he was waiting for another PCR test, which actually proved negative, and then he came back not much longer after the others. Okay. I think maybe that's the reason. The controversy was that there was a lot of, it seems like, I wasn't there, but it seemed that there was a lot of partying for the Messi family back in Rosario in Argentina when they went for the winter break. And certainly there was a lot of videos posted by Messi himself on social media, which you could clearly see they were having a great time. And maybe could have been a bit more careful that, with the virus, but that's it. I don't think there was any controversy within the club. They're hoping that he'd be ready now for, you know, obviously the next few games, but especially the big one now. And I think everything that we look at now through PSG's lens is for that Real Madrid game in the month time, where really this is where they have to be building towards and hopefully for them improving. Because if you watch them play yesterday against the Lyon team in crisis, Peter Bosz under huge pressure, and you give them already so many opportunities on transition and on counter-attacking. If you do that against Madrid, who are maybe one of the best teams in Europe this season at that, then I think you're going to face a lot of troubles.
Well, indeed. All right, well, for now, PSG 7 points clear at the top of Ligue 1 of Nice and Marseille. Nice, who won at Brest, Marseille, who got that historic win at Bordeaux that you mentioned earlier. 8 of the 14 teams that were in action this weekend failed to score a goal. Amongst them, Nantes and Monaco, who had a 0-0 draw in the debut game of Monaco's new manager, Philippe Clément, out of Club Bruges.
Yeah. Remember, we saw him on the goal show with Bruges, doing really well, not just this season, but in the past 3 seasons as well. And I think that's what really caught the eye of Paul Mitchell and Monaco. They sacked Niko Kovac on New Year's Day, which...
Raphael Honigstein's favourite coach.
Yeah, world class, as he always says, which I thought was a bit harsh. I mean, they'd lost one in the last 11 when he was sacked. Yet they were outside of the top three in France, but they were closing down on that top three. And I think a lot of the players in the dressing room were also disappointed. But that's how the Russian owner rules and the, you know, his people who running the club. And now it's Philippe Clément, who they drew 0-0. There was not much he could do after 3 days of training. But I think they like his profile and the style of football that he usually implements his team.
No clemency for Kovac, but Clément, which is of course how you pronounce it, not what I did before, for Monaco. Brilliant stuff. Excellent. Hey, is Sven Botman joining Newcastle from Lille?
Or Milan, maybe? Half dozen clubs that want him? I don't think he will go anywhere.
No, all right then.
Lille don't need money anymore.
Is that right?
No, they still do. They will sell in the summer probably more than now. It's a bit with the Champions League last 16 coming up and the games against Chelsea, plus the fact that they're still, you know, quite far behind. They didn't play this weekend. The game was postponed because of COVID reasons. But they need to make up the gap with the top three or trying to. I think they try to keep all their best players. That includes Renato Sanchez and Jonathan David, who are very likely to leave in the summer, like Botman. But not now.
Okay then. All right. After this, let's conclude with some very important news about Serie A.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Serie A, everybody, is still a 20-team league. Hooray!
Woo!
Yeah.
Salernitana was saved, really, at the last minute. I mean, I'm talking last minute of New Year's Eve. James, how dramatic was it?
Yeah, very dramatic, because the Italian Football Federation, listening to Salernitana fans who said, keep your promise, kick us out. We're sick of being co-owned by Claudio Lotito, the Lazio owner. And then, is it Danilo Iervolino, who is behind the Open University, I suppose, the Italian equivalent. He's clearly been studying up on Serie A, because his first game, they won.
So he comes in. He comes in and rescues them, and now it's all about just keeping them up. But yes, a 2-1 victory away at the Bentegodi against Verona, informed Verona, taking them to -6, only 6 points away from safety. But, you know, they've got belief, they've got morale, they've got all sorts of things in their favour now.
Yeah, also desire to spend a bit of money in the transfer window. However, I think, as is the case with clubs in the Premier League who've got more money, like Newcastle, a lot of players don't want to join a relegation battle. They don't want to be in Serie B or the Championship next year. So it is a challenge for them. Interesting how just a change of owner or just a change of, how do they say, in Italy there's a change of air, don't they? Change of atmosphere. Can just lift a team and maybe free it a little.
Well, absolutely. It must have been rotten for them, just knowing that nobody wanted them. For months and months and months they've been on the market and nobody wanted them. Anyway, they're still bottom of the table, but they're closing the gap on the side in 17th, which is Venezia, beaten by Milan this weekend. Genoa and Spezia, meanwhile, the other two teams in the bottom three, faced each other, James.
Yeah, poor Sheva.
Is he going to get the shover soon?
Well, I mean, he's had 9 games, hasn't he? He hasn't won one yet in the league. He did win in the cup. I mean, on Thursday, you know, we saw that they drew against the Sassuolo side that beat Empoli 5-1 this weekend. Mattia Destro with a lovely back-heeled goal. Destro back for the team. They've even signed the relative of Tony Yeboah, Kelvin Yeboah, who's been playing in Austria for Sturm Graz, has been scoring lots of goals, plays for Italy's youth teams. I think after Ciro Immobile, the most prolific Italian in football at the moment. I think he's been doing so well in Austria. Kelvin Yeboah.
Is he?
So he's signed. Maybe he can give Sheva a lift if they decide to stick with Sheva. The problem is that, you know, Genoa have still got a couple of coaches on their books. You know, I mean, they've changed owners, but they may not change practices in terms of having several different coaches in a year. So Rolando Moran is still on the payroll. Also, Davide Ballardini. Now, the move that Preziosi, the former owner, would make here is just bring back Ballardini. And Ballardini,
and it usually worked as well.
It would. And yeah, it's a fact that whenever he starts a season, he doesn't finish it. But when he comes in, he keeps them up. So you know what to do. Although,
it would break our hearts.
It's like killing Bambi, sacking Sheva. Yeah, it really is. But yeah, anyway, they lost 1-0. Spezia, surprisingly, James, looked like they're going to stay up. You know, even though they've got this squad with so many no-name players, they've got transfer ban as well from the previous owners. The team hates Thiago Motta. I say that's a strong way of putting it, but a portion of the dressing room doesn't really like his style of football, his way of playing. They looked at sacking Thiago Motta in between the winter break and the resumption of the league. And then Marco Giampaolo basically said, nah, I don't fancy the job. So they stuck with Thiago Motta. It's very similar to what happened with Samp, where Samp were basically going to hire Dejan Stankovic. And it just so happened that the owner got arrested whilst he was trying to do that. And Roberto De Versa stayed in place. So, yeah, bizarre stuff going on in Liguria.
What a surprise, eh?
Something in the pesto there, clearly.
You mentioned, by the way, that wonderful Sassuolo 5-1 victory over Empoli. That also marked something very special for Liam Henderson.
Yeah, the fifth Scotsman to score in Serie A. So you're thinking, what, Dennis Law, Souness, Joe Jordan.
Yep.
Hickey, who's scored a few this season.
Right.
And finally, yeah, Liam Henderson. It was just unfortunate that he gave away a penalty. He did score, but then they lost 5-1. So Sassuolo leapfrogged them. But yeah, Dionisi, one of the up-and-coming coaches who got the Sassuolo job on the back of getting this Empoli side promoted, going back and kind of saying, ha, take that. Entertaining two teams of football who, you know, we mentioned Chiesa being injured. We've probably got to mention Insigne signing for Toronto.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, and so he'll be joining them at the end of the season, which means if Italy reach the World Cup, having overcome a playoff in March, you know, they're going to be like sweating on the fitness of Chiesa. Insigne's playing MLS, but Sassuolo will solve the problem because we saw Scamacca with a brace, Raspadori with a brace, Berardi setting up these goals. You know, it's Sassuolo Nazionale. That's what's happening. So it's okay. Don't worry. Mancini's got this because Sassuolo are doing it for the Azzurri. So there
All right. Nero Verdi for the Azzurri. Magnificent stuff. Brilliant. Well, that kind of wraps things up for our jaunt round the top five European leagues-ish this week. Anything else you guys wanted to pitch in?
Well, it's 2022, James.
Yes.
And Galatasaray have parted ways with Fatih Terim.
That's
I don't know if this is the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th time this has happened, but He'll probably be back in 6 months' time. He'll probably be still coaching Galatasaray in 2022. I don't know.
It's, right.
You know.
Did you know that this is the first time in Super League history that Besiktas, Fenerbahce and Galatasaray have all now changed their managers during the same season? It's not been a great season. Yeah.
That's good.
Trabzon are running away with this.
Yeah.
10 points clear of Konyaspor. My God.
Isn't it? Fenerbahce in fourth, Besiktas in ninth, Galatasaray in 12th.
Yeah, Trabzon. Isn't that Marek Hamsik's Trabzon as well? Yeah.
Which is the one that Balotelli is playing for?
He's at Adana Demirspor on the Syrian border.
All right, then. Where are Adana Demirspor?
Seventh.
Seventh. And he got in trouble for kicking a teammate in the head. As a celebration, you know, post-goal. Anyway.
He scored 7 goals so far this season in 19 games. It's a decent return.
Yeah.
There you go, national team. Bring it on. Bring it on. It's okay. It's all right.
As many as Michy Batshuayi.
Brilliant. Now, that's where we'll leave things then for this week with a special Turkish deep dive on the horizon. We'll wrap this edition of the Totally Football Show European edition up. Many, many thanks to Alvaro, to Jules, to James and to producer Charlie. And listener, thanks to you for joining us. We'll be here next Tuesday. Do join us and have a great week in the meantime.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.